Welcome to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Europe has lost its collective mind. It talks up a coalition of the willing while blocking any settlement of the Ukraine conflict. And Zelensky descends into literal madness. Meanwhile, Russia eyes the endgame and the return of peace. To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And here in Moscow, we have Mark Sloboda. He is international relations and security analyst. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's start this off with Mark here in Moscow. So much to talk about, gentlemen. But Mark, tell us what we know about what's going on with Trump's efforts to end the conflict in Ukraine and what people think is going on, because this is where we are right now. We have, you know, we've always talked about this conflict has been wrapped up into narratives. We try to stay with facts that we know, but most people talking about winding this conflict down or a just peace or whatever you want to call it are talking more or less in illusory terms. So can you separate it for us, Mark?
Sure. I think that a lot due to the Trump administration's rhetoric, right, coming from Trump and his top officials himself talking, oh, there's a ceasefire right around the end. We're going to end this conflict. It's only a few weeks away. It's, you know, so on and so forth. That there is, I think, a reasonless sense of optimism out of all reality with what is actually happening on the diplomatic front behind the scenes. The Trump administration has tried two different partial ceasefires after receiving a polite and Socratic but negative from Russia on the idea of a general ceasefire. The first one is the electrical infrastructure. And the Kiev regime has essentially attacked Russian electrical infrastructure every single day since this ceasefire came in force. And no one even seems to be able to agree on when it actually came in force and what is covered under the ceasefire. So this one is already a wash, right? Russia is maintaining in it simply because it doesn't need to strike the Kiev regime's electrical infrastructure for another 30 days. And it's presenting itself as the good party who's making a good face effort. The other ceasefire is the Black Sea initiative, the grain deal 3.0 is dead on arrival because the Europeans who control most of what the Russian conditions, reconnection of agricultural banks to SWIFT, maritime insurance, and so forth, which was promised and never delivered in the first grain deal already several years ago, Europeans have said no. And so they've shot down Trump's other initiative. And there's no plans for any meetings now into the future. The Trump administration doesn't know what to do. They are literally up feces creek without a paddle.
Well, George, I'm really glad that Mark mentioned the Grain Initiative 3.0. Well, viewers of this program are obviously know that. But the way it's presented in Western media is like it was an idea that someone just pulled out of the sky. I mean, we've tried that. We've been there. And Mark obviously gave the reasons why it fell through. And now we have the added problem that Europe, and it was part of my introduction, is just adamant that there will not be a settlement. Why are the Europeans so against a conclusion? I didn't say peace. I didn't say victory. I didn't say defeat. A conclusion to this conflict. George?
That's a very good question. It's hard to know. I mean, other than, you know, they're so completely committed to this policy of continuing this war without any rhyme or reason in the belief that somehow, if we keep applying pressure on Putin, Putin is going to come to the negotiating table. And they've been saying this over and over again every single day for more than 3 years, and they can't say anything else. What they're trying to do now is to pretend that they're fully supportive of the Trump plans. And they're saying, yeah, we're right with the Trump, absolutely. That 30-day ceasefire that the Trump people put forward and Ukraine accepted, but Russia, terrible Russia, has refused to accept. And so what they're trying to do is to present to Trump this idea that Russia is the bad guys. Russia are the people who are standing in the way of a peace deal, and that therefore you, President Trump, for all your good intentions, your attempt to bring this war to a conclusion, you must now realize that we have been right all along. The Russians are the bad guys, and you need to join with us. That's how they're thinking, and that's why they keep repeating this, and they keep having all these meetings. They've had three of these coalition of the willing meetings. That at some point, Trump is going to get fed up with his peace plans, which are going nowhere, and he's going to say, you know what? You're absolutely right. I agree with you. The Russians are the bad guys, and I will now join you in applying further pressure against the Russians.
Yeah, well, Marco, what does this have to do? I'm not criticizing Georgia, but what does this have to do, this narrative, the good guys are bad guys? I mean, don't we want peace to come back to Europe? I mean, that, you know, we'll leave that to historians or bad journalists like Jeffrey Goldberg or something like that. I mean, Georgia's absolutely right. The way this whole narrative is cast, it refuses to allow the possibility of bringing peace back to Europe, because obviously that's not what the Europeans want. Mark.
No, the Europeans do not want peace except on their terms. They cannot accept a defeat to Russia. The Danish prime minister.
Why, Mark? To Russia.
Yeah, for ideological reasons, right? They regard Russia as barbarians, as some outer civilization, and that they are the shining garden. I mean, we've heard this in rhetoric from Borrell, von der Leyen. They believe that they are the exceptional Western civilization, and they just can't accept to losing a conflict to what they've derided as Nigeria with snow or a gas station. And it shatters their conception of the world and their place in it, and they can't accept that. It is a supremacist messianic idea of exceptionalism, and it is leading the EU, it is leading most of Europe to self-destruction in the process. The Danish prime minister said just a couple of weeks ago that peace is scarier than war in Europe. You hear it from German politicians, you hear it from others. They're preparing for war against Russia, and in a delusion that they, without the United States, are even capable of waging one. They keep talking about this coalition of the willing nonsense to send European troops into Ukraine, and even the British military, the top brass, in an article in the Telegraph, they said that their own government is staging political theater and that the British military has no ability to engage in combat with Russia on the battlefield in Ukraine. The Poles just released a report saying that in a conflict with Russia, they wouldn't last 2 weeks. The French have had similar before. They're absolutely living in a delusional reality at this point. They refuse to accept either the diplomatic reality or the military facts on the ground.
George, this coalition of there have been three major rounds. It seems like there's a round every day. As I've commented to you privately, I wish I had the catering contract. It would be a boon, okay? I mean, all they do is sit around. Don't you think they get sick of each other? It's like a bad sick sitcom, okay, that is not situational and it's not funny. But anyway, the more they meet, the less willingness there is. I mean, that's what I detect.
Well, there is, because ultimately, for all the talk, I mean, Macron started talking about this, putting troops on the ground, but he did it about a year or so ago in the hope that suddenly the Russians will start getting very nervous and say, wow, this is getting a little out of control, and we're on the brink of a war with NATO. We better back down. That was his idea, that, well, we've got to create uncertainty in the minds of the Russian leaders. And Macron has more or less been, you know, saying since then, we're ready to put troops on the ground. Now, the British have said, yeah, sure, we're ready to do that. However, we're not going to do it without the American backup. And that's the position, I think, most of the Europeans, or most of the people who attended the most recent Coalition of the Willing Summit in Paris, saying, in principle, we're ready to do it, but there has to be peace first. See, Macron had never made that as a condition of putting troops on the ground. He just said, we're going to put troops on the ground. But the other said, yeah, but we're going to get a peace first. But you're not going to get a peace unless the Russians accept this. And the Russians are not going to accept any kind of a peace agreement that will involve NATO troops on the ground. So, in fact, therefore, it's an obvious contradiction. You're not going to get a peace to put the NATO troops on the ground once the Russians know that if we stop fighting and there is peace, you're going to put NATO troops on the ground. So it's an obvious nonsense.
Go ahead, Mark.
I don't think it's a contradiction. I think it's the purpose. Whereas originally this rhetoric was about the strategic ambiguity. Oh, Russia's going to be afraid if we send troops. Russia wasn't afraid. Now I think it's the opposite. I think the British and the French know that if they bluster about putting troops on the ground as soon as there is a ceasefire, that Russia will never agree to a ceasefire. And they don't want a ceasefire. So I think that to a significant extent, this is, again, the EU logic of preventing any, you know, Trump-promoted ceasefire from taking effect. I don't think the Russians are interested in one anyway, but I think the Europeans are making sure. Their set to send troops is primarily to make sure that Russia will never agree to it, because they would never accept NATO troops, whatever the hat they're wearing, on the ground in Ukraine.
Mark, I mean, from the Kremlin's perspective, listening to all this bickering, it sounds like the Europeans have some daddy issues and things like that. How is the Kremlin interpreting all this noise?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. They are hearing it as noise, right, in the background. And Lavrov himself, several weeks ago, the Russian foreign minister, said that he doesn't really care much what the Europeans think about a settlement. He hasn't paid any attention to them for a while. I think actually he should, because they do have the ability on multiple levels to play spoilers to all of this, to the Black Sea initiative of Trump, you know, the ceasefire, to general ceasefire. Fires with threats of troops.
Well, also the financial sanctions.
Right. They can block all of this. But I think what Russia is primarily, that's noise. Russia is just going forward. And Putin said that he's not, during a speech while touring nuclear submarines and new nuclear submarines in Murmansk, he said that the Russia is willing to entertain diplomacy, but they're not going to be led by the nose by Europeans again.
All right, Mark, on that note, Mark, we're going to go to a hard break. And after that hard break, we'll continue our discussion of some real news. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk Bullhorns, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Mark, we went to a hard break there. You wanted to finish your point. Go ahead.
Yeah, so Putin said that Russia is not going to be led by the nose by the Europeans or the Americans, of course, during any type of diplomatic settlement. It will be on their terms as they're winning. But he went further and saying, letting a teaser that Russia is about to launch several major new offensives this late spring. He said that they think they have good grounds to believe that they will finish off the Kiev regime's military in the near future. That's where they're at.
You know, Russia will not be led by the nose by the West. George, why would the president of Russia say that? I mean, I know you know the answer. I know Mark knows the answer, but a lot of people don't know. Meaning we won't be led by the nose this time. What is that? Interpret that for our audience.
Well, I think he was saying something that was important. I mean, he was reassuring many people in Russia, but certainly even people in the West, who have been disappointed in the past by Russian all too eager complacence in the face of the West. And, you know, we can go all the way back to James Baker's pledges to Gorbachev in February 1990 about not one inch to the east. We can talk about the various agreements on Ukraine. You know, talked about the 2014 coup in the Maidan, which there was supposed to be a coalition government. There was supposed to be elections held in December. That never happened. There was the overthrow of the legitimate government in Kiev. Then there was the Minsk I and Minsk II. And at each stage, Russia was very accommodating, even though there were many people in Russia and people, you know, in the West who follow these things, who were saying, well, what do you think? What do you think these people are doing? I mean, of course, the West is going to pick your pocket. Of course, the West are going to say, yeah, absolutely. You know, we're going to support this agreement, or we're going to support this deal, not one inch to the east and everything else. Of course, the moment that you agree, they're going to go back on their word. And I think that's why it was very important for him to say that oh, we're not going to be led by the nose, that this time we're not going to, you know, settle for a Minsk III, because this is what many people have been expecting, that somehow Trump is going to come along and start talking about, well, let's have a, you know, new partnership, a new deal on this and a new deal on that, and we can work on all sorts of things globally, arms control, Iran, China, whatever. But in the meantime, Russia will just give up everything that it has fought for 3 years and you know, suffered considerably as a result. And I think that's why it was important for him to reassure, saying, no, this time, you know, we're not going to be led by the nose. We're not just going to, you know, settle for a nice smile and a nice little cup of tea with the leaders of the West.
Well, Mark, you and I have been down this track so many times. I mean, I remember going all the way back to 2014. You were absolutely a very sharp critic of Russia's position from, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but from 2014 to 2022.
Yeah, I'm a sharp critic of the West and of the
new regime, in addition to
that was forming in Kiev. And again, with the February 21st, Minsk 1, Minsk 2, the Istanbul communique, Russians were afraid once again that Putin, however decisive he can be at times, he is very much a moderate in Russian politics. And they were afraid that he would return under Trump's, shall we say, dubious charms to his natural tendency to seeking a diplomatic and legal solution. You know, it doesn't fit with the narrative of the monster Hitler, Darth Vader Putin in Western media, but that's just a caricature of the reality. But Putin has indicated that he has indeed learned his lesson with his Europhilia, and that this is not going to be the case again. And I think there's a lot of Russians, a lot of Eastern Ukrainians, former Eastern Ukrainians, my family there included, who breathed a sigh of relief to hear this, that Putin was not going to be bamboozled again by a duplicitous West, whether it's from the Trump administration or from the Europeans. And there is no indication that Russia is going to settle for anything less. In fact, they're intimating that they may indeed take much more, including Odessa, Dnepr, basically the entirety of the East, the east side of Ukraine at this point, if a peace settlement is not reached in the very short term, which it almost certainly will not be.
You know, George, I think that there's been a fundamental misinterpretation on the part of the Trump team, considering the Signal conversation that was leaked. I mean, these guys, it's not encouraging. These guys are not the sharpest knives in the drawer. Let that be as it may. But I think that the approach from the administration is that the Americans and the Russians can stabilize their bilateral relationship, everything else will fall into line. Well, the three of us never believed that. And now I think we're being proven right. I mean, Russia does want to have a normal, stable relationship with the United States and in the West in general. The Europeans can learn to respect their neighbors eventually. But improving bilateral relations isn't going to cut the mustard here. As a matter of fact, it will spoil it, possibly. George.
No, you're absolutely right. And Mark has just made a very important point, which is that Russia has given no indication that it is ready to settle and that somehow in exchange for a normalization of relations with the United States, in exchange for some nice friendly summit between Trump and Putin, it's ready to give up its aims in Ukraine. And I think many of us have been very pleasantly surprised by the fact that when Mike Waltz and Marco Rubio met the Ukrainians in Saudi Arabia and then said, hey, well, 30-day ceasefire, you know, what could be better than that? And then now the ball is in Putin's court. That Russia responded rather quickly and said, yeah, well, in principle, you know, that's a good idea. However, we will want this, this, and this. We're not going to allow you to use the 30-day pause in order to strengthen Ukraine, in order to keep pouring arms into Ukraine, in order to train Ukraine, in order to mobilize forces in Ukraine. We're not going to go for that. And as all the other things as well, when we were talking about the Black Sea Grain Initiative, Russia said, yeah, good idea. However, it will only go into effect if you this time you do fulfill your promises, the promises you made back in 2023, namely, you're going to lift the sanctions against the Agricultural Bank, if you're going to actually do what you said you would do, which is to help us to export our grain and fertilizers onto the world markets. And same with the energy infrastructure. Yeah, absolutely great idea. However, these and these have to be off limits in any deal. So what the Russians are doing are making clear that this time they're not going to go for it. And really, there's no indication at all so far that the Russians are willing to settle just for the sake of some nice summit with the United States. And that, I think, is what the Trump team had been counting on. Oh, Russia really wants normalization. Russia wants to be brought in from the cold. They want to have good relations with the United States. Above all, they want a summit with the president of the United States, and that's it. And then after that, we'll just break our promises. And the Russians have just said, no, we're not interested in any summit. And all the talk about the summit is now gone.
Mark, can the Europeans actually play the role of the spoiler, even if for some strange reason the U.S. and Russia could move forward beyond this kind of fictional ceasefire? And a kind of a corollary question, how much is this, does Trump want this?
Yeah, so I first of all, I think the Signalgate affair, that reaffirms my worst suspicions that this Trump administration, whether you believe their intentions are good or bad, myself, I don't even think in those terms, that they are rank amateurs, that they don't know what they're doing, either diplomatically or strategically. I mean, they're bombing a country with emoticons. I mean, in their messages to each other. I mean, that, sorry. I can't take that seriously. I think now they're stymied because they haven't thought about the need of what kind of leverage they need to use on Europe now to get their own European ostensible allies in line. When the Europeans are now, they want to play for 5 years and hope that Trump is a flash in the pan and that the next U.S. president is another Biden and returns to normal hegemonic form. That's where Europe is at right now. I don't know if the Trump administration, whom is already getting bogged down in many potential wars in the Middle East, this whole diplomatic process is working out to be much more complicated than they thought it was. The Russians sense the Trump administration's desperation, and they know that Trump, yes, is a flash in the pan, and they're not going to settle for anything less than their terms in the long interest. So the Trump administration is at a really bad situation diplomatically, economically, and even militarily, getting bogged down in too many things that Trump didn't want to get bogged down in. And now he's got a challenge from the Kiev regime, which is denying his new colonial, I own all of Ukraine's resources forever dictate, which I think is probably meant to specifically so that the Ukrainians refuse it. I think the Trump administration is still looking for and trying to set the stage for walking away from Ukraine, completely washing their hands of it and blaming Biden and the Europeans. But I think the Europeans do have the ability to play a spoiler, at least in regards to the U.S.'s desire for a diplomatic settlement on terms that would preserve their proxy regime in Ukraine in whatever form, and of Russia's desire for a normalization of relations with the West, which, I'm sorry, is not on the cards, not in this generation of European leaders.
All right, so I think we can sum it up here. It's one step forward, three steps back, maybe more back. I don't know. I want to thank my guests in Budapest and here in Moscow. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk rules.